Several years ago, I faced a decision in my ministry that was, for me, a very critical one. I would not for a minute lead you to believe that I am in any way a famous preacher. But I did, about 6 years ago, face a decision as to what I would do with my life. Several, yea, many opportunities were on my desk before me. At that time, there was a seminary who had written me asking me to come and be their president, be its president. There was a letter from a board of a college asking me if I would be the president of that college. There were 22 invitations to citywide revival campaigns in cities over a quarter of a million people. Being only one person and having only one life to live, I sought to find the will of God for the rest of my life. I pastored this church. Many duties and responsibilities. I'm on 70 radio stations. I'm constantly writing books. I travel 150,000 miles a year. In the last 7 years, I've traveled over 1,000,000 miles on airplanes. I've preached over 3.5 sermons a day for 16 years. And for several years, I preached over 4 sermons a day. There are many duties, many duties. Realizing that I could not do them all, I sought the will of God concerning the rest of my life. I made 3 decisions that I have oft mentioned from this platform. I decided that if God would let me, first, I would pastor the First Baptist Church of Hammond the rest of my life. Number 2, I decided that I would give my life to preaching to preachers. I turned down these 22 revivals in Denver, Colorado, Dallas, Texas, Flint, Michigan, Jacksonville, Florida, Jackson, Michigan, and other cities across the country. And I gave my public speaking ministry to trying to preach to as many preachers as I could. Last year, for example, I spoke to 24,000 preachers in this nation. I felt the secret to the country was to stir the preacher. And I felt, by the way, I heard of an orator one time who spoke and continued speaking a tremendous oration before Plato, just the one man. And somebody looked at him and said, "Man, why would you bring such a long speech to Plato?" He says, "As long as Plato listens, I'll speak. For I've never had such a distinguished congregation in my life." And so I've decided to find the preachers and preach to them. The third thing that I felt God would have me to do was write books. I found that the men who have lived after they died were men who left books. That's one reason why I'm more interested in books than I am television ministry or radio ministry even. A radio broadcast is made and it's over. But a book is printed, it lingers on and on and on and on. That's why I think that a record is more important than a radio program. That's why I think that a tape is more important than a television program. Because they are replayed and replayed and played and replayed. So I gave myself to these 3 ministries. 1, pastoring the First Baptist Church of Hammond, Indiana. 2, preaching to preachers. And 3, the writing of books. Now, in the making of that decision, Psalm 84 and verse 6 had a great influence in my life. This verse, passing through Baca, and I'll explain to you what Baca is, but get this. Who passing through the valley of Baca, make it a well, the rain also filleth the pools. Now if you listen carefully, I'm going to explain to you this verse, and if you just get this, you'll learn some Bible. Baca was a place known or called the Valley of Sorrow. One writer has interpreted the Valley of Lamentation. In the Latin Vulgate, it's called a Vale of Tears. To say the least, Baca was a dry, barren place through which the people who journeyed to Jerusalem had to pass on their journeys. It was dry, hence there was no water. So the traveler passing through this Vale of Tears, through this Valley of Sorrows, through this Valley of Lamentation, would dig a hole, or they were told to dig holes through the valley of Baca, so that when it rained, these holes could hold the water that had fallen from the sky, providing drinking water and water for other uses for the traveler who comes later. Don't you see? The valley of sorrow, the valley of lamentation, the vale of tears. There cometh another one after me. It says, there, John said, there cometh one after me. There cometh one after me. And so our Lord is saying, as you travel through this valley of tears, this valley of sorrow, this vale of tears, this valley of lamentation, our Lord is saying, make it easier on those who follow. Don't just walk through your own valley having no water, but dig a hole, and dig several holes, so that those who come after may enjoy the valley and have privileges that you did not have. Now, this passage had a great deal to do with my decision. I decided to do in my life the things that would aid those who come after me. That's why I work with the young people so much. That's why I preach to the young people so much. That's why I'm interested in young preachers. That's why I write books, because there cometh some after me. An old man traveled a lone highway who came to the evening at the end of day to a chasm vast and deep and wide through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man passed in the twilight dim, for that sullen stream had no fear for him. But he paused as he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. Good friend, said a fellow traveler near, you're wasting your time in building here. Your journey will end with the ending of day, and you must never again pass this way. Why pause you at eventide to build a bridge vast and wide? Good friend, said the old man, lifting his head, there cometh after me, he said, a youth who also must pass this way. He too must pass in the ending of day. He too must cross in the twilight dim. Good friend, I am building this bridge for him. And that's what I decided to do. Young people are coming after me. Young preachers are coming after me. Another generation is yet to follow. And I gave my life to trying to help those who follow. Now let us look for a few minutes at Baca. Young folks on the front, be still. Let us look for a few minutes at Baca. The Valley of Baca, or Baca if you prefer. The Valley of Baca. The Valley of Sorrow. If you have not yet journeyed through that valley, you will enter the Valley of Baca. All of us come to the Vale of Tears. Each of us comes to the time in his life when sorrow is heavy and the load is hard to bear. You will have Baca. You young people this morning, you don't have many burdens, maybe. Maybe yet the clouds have not come into your life often. Maybe the tears have not fallen much. Maybe the shadows have not come to veil your life. Maybe the rain has not fallen, but it will. Every person listening to my voice today will come to the Valley of Baca, the Valley of Sorrow. He who danced before the Lord when the Ark of the Covenant came back to Jerusalem cried from the depths in the 51st Psalm. He who rose from the dead after 3 days and three nights also cried, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? He who said, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want, also said, I looked on my right hand, refuge failed me. No man cared for my soul. He who saw the Christ on the Damascus Road in his glory also sat in prison in Rome, writing alone in the Mamertine prison. He who prayed the fire down from heaven also sat under the juniper tree. And he who leaned on Jesus' breast also was exiled to the Isle of Patmos. I am simply saying we all will face our Baca. If you have not yet been to the silent city of the dead and laid someone to rest in Babyland, or laid someone dearer to you than life itself and walked away wondering exactly what life was all about, only return to an empty chair at the table, an empty place in the bed, and shoes that will not be worn again, and clothes that will not be worn again, and coats that will not be worn again, and only to find wonder about life and have memories of the past to see a picture on the hearth, and that's all. You who have not yet done that, you will one of these days. Baca is going to come for all of us. If you've never yet felt the surgeon's knife piercing your body, if you've never yet felt what it means to roll down to the hallway of a hospital and into a dark room and to have a shot in your arm and something over your mouth and to feel for a few moments a sprain sensation and then soon comes the surgery, if you've not felt that yet, you will. Baca's going to come. Everybody must pass through the valley of Baca. If you have not yet paced the hall in the hospital, looking into a room longingly and anxiously, wondering if the life is still in the breast of that person you love like you love your own life, if you've not yet gone to the waiting room and waited for that 5 minutes when you can go to the ward where you can only go 5 minutes, the intensive care ward, and finally you go in and you find him still alive, hanging on by a thread, and you go back and wait 55 more minutes and wonder if life will still be there when that time is over. If you've never done that, you will. If you've never turned your face toward the wall and wondered if life was worth living, you will. If tears have ever fallen like streams in the desert, they will. If your heart has ever felt that funny feeling until you feel like it'll actually break in two and you wonder if you can stand alone, you will. Baca's going to come, ladies and gentlemen. Baca is going to come. Pius Brooks said, "Oh, the love tokens, the love letters, the bracelets and the jewels that the saints are able to produce since they have been in the furnace of affliction." A great reformer said, "Prayer is the best book in my library. Affliction is next." And so the apostle is telling us here, or the psalmist is telling us, we will be in the valley of tears. We will. You're going to have your heartache. You're going to face death. You're going to look at a dying loved one. You're going to hear the word cancer applied to you or to someone very dear. Now then, we face a decision. I must go to Baca someday. You must go to Baca someday. I must weep until I can weep no more. And I must carry a load till I feel like I cannot stand up anymore. And I must have a broken heart. And you must have a broken heart. Now we have one choice of two. We can either be selfish or selfless. We can say, nobody appreciates me. And I have it rougher than anybody else. Or my load is more than I can bear. We can feel sorry for ourselves, or we can say, thank God, I met Jesus there at the graveside, or I met Jesus at the surgery, or I met Jesus at the time of a broken heart. We can spend our lives for somebody else. Miserable is the person who lives for himself. Wretched is the life that wonders what is in it for me. Unhappy is this miserable old sin-cursed country of ours that everybody wants something else for himself. We want more pay. We want shorter hours. We want more wages. We want better benefits. We want more attention. We want more comforts. We want more luxury. And this old miserable sin-cursed selfish world plunges man long toward destruction because nobody seems to find that happiness is not found in serving yourself, but happiness isn't found in digging pools for those who come later. Now notice, passing through. Are you listening? Passing through. We don't live in Baca, we pass through. We're not here permanently, we're passing through. This last week I went to Texas. As you know, I don't mean to be funny now. Every Texan loves Texas. We're taught in school from childhood. We're taught patriotism for America and patriotism for Texas. We fly the Texas flag, and right beside it, we fly the Texas flag. We know what our the bird is, and the color is, and the song is. We know that. We're taught to be, and I love Texas. It's in my blood. I love the flat plains, the black lands of North Texas, and I love it. But I was back in Texas this week, and I drove again over paths that I had driven before, never to drive permanently again. I saw vacant lots where I'd played baseball. I passed by one vacant lot, and I'd got more strawberries in that vacant lot. You folks that never played baseball know what a strawberry is. That's when you slide into a base, and it just peels the skin right off of your thigh right here. And it's a strawberry. It just bleeds a little bit. and forms a scab, and the next day you plug in, you slide the same place, it tears the scab off. And then it hurts even worse than it did before. But I passed by vacant lots where I had played, others now play. I passed by a ball field where I had pitched a no-hit, no-run game as a kid, now others play on that ball field. I passed by a baseball field where I once had tried to knock the ball over a fence way out, and that was my goal, knock the ball someday over that fence, and now others are seeking to accomplish the same goal. I passed by a church where I once pastored and gave my life and thought I'd spend my life. Now another preacher's behind that pulpit, and others walk those halls, and others sit on the platform, and others do what I used to do. Let me say, ladies and gentlemen, don't get too much in love with this world. We're just passing through. This world is not my home. I'm just passing through. My treasures are laid up somewhere beyond the blue. The angels beckon me from heaven's golden shore. And I can't feel much at home in this world anymore. Unwise is the person who lives for this world. Unwise is the person who just lives for today. Foolish is that person who thinks he's here forever, happy, contented, and wise is that person who says, I'll not be here forever. I'm going to spend my life preparing for those who come after and for my own future. I've said this so often, and this is the outline of my little message this morning. Only two things matter in this life. Are you listening? Two things. One is, whom you send ahead. Two, what you leave behind. That's all that matters. That's all that matters in this world. Whom you send ahead and what you leave behind. Let's look at those two things briefly. In the first place, whom you send ahead. Whom you send ahead. The person who gives his life like these kids did yesterday, out witnessing and telling folks about Jesus and getting folks saved so they can go to heaven and be with Christ forever. That's the wise person. Whom you send ahead. You spend your time buying and selling and marrying and getting in marriage and talking on the telephone and watching television and going to the grocery store. And those things, some are necessary, but most of them are temporal. The wise person says, I'm going to send folks ahead. Several years ago, I had a dream. One of the most unusual dreams I ever had in my life. I dreamed I went to a funeral. But the unusual thing about it was my funeral. I dreamed that I walked in the door. And I was both an onlooker in the service, and I was also the corpse. And there at the altar was my body in a casket. It was my funeral. And then suddenly I was not in the audience anymore. I was only in the casket. But the strange thing about it is, I knew what was going on. I mean, I couldn't move my lips, and I couldn't open my eyes, but I knew what was going on. And I could see. Somebody stood, and I forget who preached the funeral, but somebody stood, and they said a few words of kindness about my life and ministry. And there was a great crowd of people there. The building was packed, and there were some tears. Some denominations were having banquets in honor of my death, but there were some tears, and the bootleggers were happy, and the dirty hippie crowd rejoiced, I'm sure. And I'd hate to be the kind of preacher that wouldn't make the hippies happy if I died. And I'd hate to be the kind of preacher that wouldn't make dirty liquor traffic happy if I died. And I'd hate to be the kind of preacher that had the dirty narcotics crowd and the revolutionary crowd and the new morality crowd and the playboy philosophy crowd. I'd hate to be the kind of preacher that all those folks liked and didn't hate with a passion. But I was at my own funeral, and there was a song. The song was my favorite song. Oh, I love it. It's blessed my soul through these years. Blessed assurance, Jesus is mine. Oh, what a foretaste of glory divine. Watching and waiting, looking above. Oh, the blessed joy of the assurance we have in Christ, lost in His goodness and His love. This is my story. This is my song, praising my Savior all the day long. And I rejoice as I realize they're singing my favorite song. Fanny Crosby wrote it. Through her blindness. And then the strangest thing happened. Suddenly in the funeral, the undertaker got up in the back and he asked the folks to start walking down and looking at me. And to my complete surprise, nobody was at that funeral but folks I'd won to Christ. Nobody. And the building was full, thank God. And the folks were waiting outside.
And they came by one at a time. And they looked at my face. And though they did not know I could hear, they said one after another, "Brother Hiles, you told me how to go to heaven. And you taught me about Christ. And I love you. And I'll miss you. And I'll see you in heaven." Oh, the longer I live, the less it matters what I have. The longer I live, the less it matters whether I'm liked or disliked. The longer I live, the less it matters whether I'm loved or hated. The longer I live, the less it matters whether I play or not. The longer I live, the less it matters how much I have. The longer I live, the less it matters what kind of car I drive, or what kind of clothes I wear, or what kind of popularity I have. The longer I live, what does it matter whether I'm happy or not happy? What does it matter whether I'm comfortable or uncomfortable? The only thing that matters, am I serving God while I'm here? Let me tell you something this morning. Foolish is that person who lives for himself and doesn't point others toward heaven to be with Christ forever. Oh, the only thing that matters, whom you send ahead. But that isn't all. The second thing, what you leave behind. What you leave behind. Traveling through the Valley of Baca, I laugh a lot. You know I do. I enjoy life. I enjoy a good joke. I wish Dr. Billings would get some good ones sometime. I enjoy a good joke. I have fun. I always enjoy life everywhere I go. And I laugh a lot. And I cut up a great deal. But let me tell you something. I've seen Baca. I've got some spiritual scars. There have been times in my life when I faced the wall and wondered if I could preach again. There have been times in my life when I've been threatened. I've walked in this pulpit at least 20 times in these 14 years now when somebody had told me they'd be in the audience with a gun and they'd shoot me if I walked up in the pulpit. At least 20 times I've had that kind of a threat. I've faced the wall time and time and time again. Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something. If I died today, blessed be God, I'd leave a few things. What would you leave if you died today? As you travel through Baca, the psalmist said, dig some holes in the ground so the water can fall, and those who come after will not have to go through a dry, barren land, but they'll have water to enjoy because you took care and time while you were in Baca. All over America, I see Mel Brown back there. I love him more than he realizes. And I thank God for him and all of my preacher boys. You know, the Lord has blessed me. I don't know why. But the Lord's been so good to me in making... It's a shame to say this, but maybe it's because when I preach it looks so easy, everybody thinks he can do it. I don't know. But God is... There's not any three preachers alive that have as many preacher boys as I have. I'm not talking about college students. I'm talking about boys, my own church, my own kids. The other day, a boy came to my office and said, "Pastor, I can't get a date." And I said, "Why?" And he said, "Because around here, you got to be a preacher boy to get a date with a girl." And he said, "What can I do?" I said, "Surrender to preach." He said, "Pastor, somebody's got to be lawyers and doctors." And I said, "Let the Presbyterians be lawyers and doctors. Let all of our kids be preachers." Now, I don't quite mean that. I don't think all our kids are preachers because the girls shouldn't. But my preacher boys, I've tried in these years to leave some pools. And sitting back in the back this morning is one of the pools I'll leave. If these lips never preach another sermon, I've got a refreshing pool back there that I've tried to dig in the life of Mel Brown and 90-some-odd full-time Christian workers all over this world. I'm not counting the college kids. I'm talking about the kids I baptized. I'm talking about the ones that have grown up in my church. And they stand this morning all over this world like a mighty army thundering out the message of God even while I'm preaching here. Hallelujah, thank God. I've got some pools I've tried to dig. And if I die, it'll be easier, I hope, and more refreshing for the travelers who come a bit later. All over the world, my tapes and books. Mrs. Nistick will tell you that the tapes go all over this world. I figure that I have 200,000 tapes around this world now. I'm preaching all the time. Up in Iceland, they have a Jack Hiles Day up there once a week, a fellow told me. Up in Iceland, and you gather around the radio. And on ships at sea, they have tapes of mine, and they have a night a week when they gather around and hear Hiles preach his sermons of last Sunday. And all around the world, blessed be God, if I die today, there's something I've left. And I've got the books and preachers I've tried to influence. And I've tried to give my money. I reached my billfold this morning, opened up my money, and it didn't have any. And it dawned on me when I was a kid in Texas. I used to sit at the table. Mother and I would sit at the table. She'd open a can of Popeye spinach. Remember the old Popeye spinach? Huh? That's why I'm so strong, boy. Yeah, old Popeye, he'd be real weak and about to get licked, you know, and the bad guys would have him down. All of a sudden, he'd reach out and grab a can of spinach and pour it down his guzzle and boy up and knock him over the moon. And that's why I knock him over the moon. I grew up on Popeye spinach. But we'd be sitting there eating a bit of spinach. Or maybe Mother'd fry a potato. As I've said before, Thanksgiving Day 1932, she fried a potato, one potato, and we shared it for Thanksgiving. And I sat at the table time and time again. And I said, it's not going to be this way all the time. And I dreamed as a little kid in a little shack in Texas, I dreamed of someday being a millionaire. I drove in Rolls Royces, and I lived in a gorgeous home. And I wore diamonds, and I was a millionaire. And last night, I said, and this morning I said it again. Do you know I have made $1 million? I mean, for me. I don't mean raised it. I mean I have made $1 million in my life. I mean, if I had taken all the money that was mine that I've made and kept it, I'd be a millionaire. But I've given it all away. You'll forgive me. I don't mean to be bragging. I've sent 46 people through college in these years. Nobody in this world knows that. But I was thinking last night, if my life were taken, and if suddenly I had to go, I went on to heaven and my work was left to others, I was thinking, I've paid the tuition, and in many cases the room and board for 46 students to go through college. I used to pray for God to help me to send my own kids through. Oh, listen to me. I'd hate to live a life for myself. I'd hate to live a life. What can I get? What is it for me? Let go of it! Listen, there cometh one after me who also must pass this way. He too must cross in the ending of day. He too must pass in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for him. What is the life you're living today? What is the message it bears on its way? Others are waiting. Oh, what does it say? What is your life today? Is it a beacon to guide the way? Is it like sunrise that brings a new day? Does it help others over life's way? What is your life today? Oh, you little selfish people sitting on 18 inches of lumber this morning, trying to grasp everything you can get for yourself, and trying to put everything you can get in the bank for yourself, and trying to make yourself happy, and you don't want anybody to dislike you and mistreat you and hate you, and you want to live for self and self and self and self and self. Get out of it! Live for somebody else. Realize this veil of tears is but a place to dig holes so the refreshing showers from heaven can be contained for those who come after, so they'll have what we didn't have. Man sat in my office last night. One of our fine men. He said, Brother Hiles, I've had a tough life, and he has. He said, my life has been sinful and rough, and I didn't have any of the pleasures and opportunities that I wanted to have. But he said, I have 4 children. And he said, I'm going to see they get in Hammond Baptist schools. And I'm going to work. I don't care what I have to do. I'm going to see that my kids don't sow the wild oats that I sowed and live the wicked life that I live. He said, I'm going to make it easier on them. And I thought, that's the answer. That's what life is all about. Make it easier on the one who comes after. That's what it's all about. Last week, and I'll say a few words about it tonight. Last Friday afternoon and evening, I thought my heart would break in two. It just seems like that numbers of our kids kept coming in. And in trouble, one of our boys, I've given my life to him. I've seen him more than I've seen any boy, I guess, in this church. He went off to school. He wanted so badly to go to Hammond Baptist High School, but he was forbidden to go. And he got worldly oriented, but I loved him. And he came to my office and he said, "I no longer believe the Bible." And two or three others came. And I looked at him and I said, "I think you're like a fellow who's built a house and given his life to build a great house. And when it got finished, it was blown, destroyed by a tornado." Kids, if you don't turn out right, my life is wasted. A little lady. This morning somewhere in Hammond, got up early. She went out and got in the car and drove over to the bus center. It was early in the morning. She didn't get much sleep last night. She left the dishes in the sink. She got up early and made breakfast. From 8 to 9, she covered a bus route. She went up to places, and in some cases, she helped dress the children. She gathered a bunch of little incorrigible kids, in some cases, on the bus. She brought them to God's house this morning, and they heard the story of Christ. She's got the idea. Oh, she's digging some holes in Baca. I know a little lady, I'm thinking of many of them, but one I'm thinking of this morning. I know a little lady, her life is filled with sorrow. Tears fall from her eyes down on the floor past her cheeks almost all the time. She has heartache and heartbreak and a heavy load to bear, and yet she doesn't think about it. She's in Baca. Yes. She's in the valley of tears. Yes. She's in the place of suffering. Yes. But she doesn't complain. I walked down the hall this morning. One of our departmental superintendents met me in the hall. She's got enough burdens to cause most people to drop over. But a smile, "Good morning for the Hiles," and goes into the children and sings with the children and makes them all happy. And anybody who sees her is happy. And I thought this morning, how does she do it? She carries a load. She's in Baca herself, but she's not busy wiping her own wounds. She's busy digging holes so the waters that come from heaven can be retained for little boys and girls with future. She's thinking about those that come after. She's sending those ahead and planning for those that come after. This morning, a little mother in this church, like Hannah of old, she prayed for a boy. And like Hannah of old, she gave her boy to God when he was born. And that little mother this morning in Baca, she has burdens to bear. I thought last night about the Loser boys. I don't know why. Four of them. All four of them preachers. And I thought that didn't come accidentally. God bless dear Mrs. Loser, who's prayed and counseled, and she's called me and said, "You got to talk to my boys, and you got to see David, and you got to see Larry, and you got to see Dick, and you got to see Alan." And she's been a buddy and a help and a mother, and that don't come accidentally. It comes on purpose as we lose ourselves, as a Sunday school teacher visits and prays, as a superintendent does his job, as a bus worker works on his route, as a faithful teacher in a Christian school goes with less money than he ought to make and tries to make ends meet and wears last year's hand-me-down clothes of somebody else, but gives his life to make pools of water for those who come later. That's what life is all about. And that's where you find real happiness and joy. But there's something all can leave. There's something everybody can leave. If suddenly, as has happened to two of my preacher friends, if suddenly I were to get weak in the pulpit and the room were to go round and round, And I were to grasp for the pulpit and suddenly slump. And the men on the platform would say, "Gather, get aside. Let him breathe, let him breathe." My fingers turn blue. And Dr. Streeter rushes up and feels the pulse and gives artificial respiration. And somebody says, "He's gone. He's gone. I can leave to those who follow me the blessed heritage of knowing I'm in heaven." On May 13, 1950, my sister and I went to a house in North Dallas. We went to a room that was occupied by my father during his last years. He did not live at home. We walked in that little room, and we divided my father's total valuation. We had to pay his funeral bill. He left us, are you listening? He left us these things: a pair of khaki trousers, a work shirt, a toy cannon, and an empty whiskey bottle. And memories. I've gone to bed at night and dreamed. I've waked up in the middle of the night and cried. Oh, if I had the heritage of having a dad in heaven. If I had the heritage. I don't care about no money. I don't care if dad left no any money. I don't care if he left any possessions. I'm not concerned about that. But oh, if I had that heritage this morning of knowing I'd see my dad in heaven. Last night I tried, when I went to bed, I tried to forget. I was thinking about this. I tried to forget a dirty joke that Dad used to tell. I've heard him tell it time and time again. Filthy. I've tried to forget it. But I can't forget it. Young friends, listen to me this morning and I'll close. I've lived 46 years. I've counseled with thousands of people. I know something about life. Now you listen to me. Young people, you're not going to be happy or live a life that's rewarding by thinking about yourself. Ladies, do you know one reason you have so many nervous breakdowns? Selfishness. You just trot from one person to the other, telling them about your problems, or pick up the telephone, dial one number after the other, talking about your problems. What do you mean? The whole world is hungry. Boys and girls have no moms and dads, and there are too many people dying in sin, lost without God, not enough food to eat, nobody to love them. For us to while we're in the valley of Baca, to wipe our own wounds all the time and feel sorry for ourselves. Get up and dig some wells. Think about those that come after. The happy people are those who are sending people ahead and leaving things behind. An old man traveled a lone highway. He came to the evening, cold and gray, to a chasm vast and deep and wide, through which was flowing a sullen tide. The old man crossed in the twilight dim, for that sullen stream had no fear for him. But he paused as he reached the other side and built a bridge to span the tide. "Good friend," said a fellow traveler near, "you're wasting your time in building here. Your journey will end with the ending of day, and you must never again pass this way. Why pause you at eventide to build a bridge to span the tide?" "Good friend," said the old man, "bending here, there cometh after me," he said, as the old man lifted his hoary head, "a youth who also must pass this way. He too must cross in the ending of day. He too must pass in the twilight dim. Good friend, I'm building this bridge for them."